Blog Talk Radio.
Congress voted
to go Red Rover, Red Rover, send some more Muslims on over. Hillary Clinton has said she'll bring in more Muslims. Donald Trump has said he'll allow in more Muslims. The GOP and the Democrats are the flip side of the same coin. So put on your patented Stuponatron listening helmets, my friends, because it's time to get your Islam on. For those of you who love me or hate me, our call-in line is 347-857-1197. And if you have questions, I'll most likely see them from the chat room, which is open. Keep your extremities and obscenities to yourselves at all times. And if you absolutely have to call in and shout at me, please do it in English, not in Arabic, Farsi, or some other. And that number is a special hotline number, 347-857-1197. Durka, Durka, go blow yourself up. Anyway, moving right along, where we left off, the Battle of Badr. In the Battle of Badr was the first significant engagement fought by the Prophet. Upon establishing himself in Medina, funky, cold Medina, following the Hijra, Muhammad began a series of razias. Sounds funky to me, but they're raids on caravans of Meccan tribal people en route to Syria. Volume 5, Book 59, number 287, narrated by Ka'b bin Malik. The apostle had gone out to meet the caravans of the Quraysh, but Allah caused them, i.e. Muslims, to meet their enemy unexpectedly with no previous intention. Volume 5, Book 59, number 289, narrated Abbas. On the day of the Battle of Badr, the Prophet said, O Allah, I appeal to you to fulfill your covenant and promise. O Allah, if your will is that none should worship you, then give victory to the pagans. Then Abu Bakr took hold of him by the hand and said, This is sufficient for you. The Prophet came out saying, Their multitude will be put to fight, and they will show their backs. That is from 54-45. Having returned to funky old Medina after the battle, Muhammad admonished the resident Jewish tribe of Kayanuka to accept Islam or face a similar fate as the Quraysh, 312 and 13. The Kayanuka phlegm agreed to leave Medina if they could retain their property, which Muhammad granted. Following the exile, the Ban Kaiflim, Muhammad turned to individuals in Medina he considered to have acted treacherously. The Prophet particularly seems to have disliked the many poets who ridiculed his new religion and his claim to prophethood, a theme evident today in the violent reactions of Muslims to any perceived mockery of Islam. Boom. In taking action against his opponents, the ideal man sets precedents for all time as to how Muslims should deal with detractors of their religion, such as people that draw the Prophet with a bomb on his head or any other mockery. Surah, page 367. Then he, Ka'b bin al-Ashraf, composed amatory verses of an insulting nature about the Muslim women. The apostle said, Who will rid me of Ibn Ashraf? Muhammad bin Maslama, brother of the Bani Abul Ash'al, said, I'll deal with him for you, O apostle of God. I will kill him, he said. Do so if you can. All that is incumbent upon you is that you should try, said the prophet to Muhammad bin Maslama. He said, "Oh, apostle of God, we shall have to tell lies." He, being the prophet, answered, "Say what you like, for you are free in the matter." This from Volume 4, Book 52, Number 270, narrated by Jabir bin Abdullah. The prophet said, "Who is ready to kill Ka'b bin al-Ashraf, who has really hurt Allah and his apostle?" Muhammad bin Maslama said, "Oh, Allah's apostle, do you like me to kill him?" And he replied in the affirmative. So Muhammad bin Maslama went to him and said, "This person, the prophet, has put us to task and asked us for charity." Ka'b replied, "By Allah, you will get tired of him." Muhammad said to him, "We have followed him, so we dislike to leave him till we see the end of his affair." Muhammad bin Maslama went on talking to him in this way till he got the chance to kill him. A significant portion of the surah is devoted to poetry composed by Muhammad's followers and his enemies in rhetorical duels that mirrored those in the field. There seems to have been an informal competition in aggrandizing oneself, one's tribe, and one's God while ridiculing one's adversary in eloquent and memorable ways. Ka'b bin Malik, one of the assassins of his brother, Ka'b bin al-Ashraf, composed the following. Surah, page 368. Ka'b bin Malik said, "Of them, Ka'b was left prostrate there. After his fall, the Jewish tribe of al-Nadir were brought low. Sword in hand, we cut him down by Muhammad's order. When he sent secretly by night Ka'b's brother to go to Ka'b, he beguiled him and brought him down with guile. Mahmud was trustworthy and bold." So as you can see, the Muslims are willing to lie at all costs to accomplish whatever they can. And under Islamic law, it is acceptable to lie in order to accomplish the goals of Islam. So a Muslim can look you directly in the eye and say, "Yes, yes, we are peaceful. Yes, yes, we love America. Yes, yes. We have no intent to cause you any harm." Because at that very moment, they don't, because they might be outnumbered and outgunned. But as soon as the tide has turned, they will stab you in the back, slit your throat, slice your belly, and leave you for dead. But at that very moment, they will lie to you because they don't have any intent at that moment. Moving on to the Battle of Uhud. The Meccan Quraysh regrouped for an attack on the Muslims at Medina. Muhammad got wind of the Meccan force coming to attack him and encamped his forces on a small hillock north of Medina named Uhud, where the ensuing battle took place. Volume 5, Book 59, Number 337, narrated Jabir bin Abdullah. On the day of the Battle of Uhud, a man came to the prophet and said, "Can you tell me where I will be if I should get martyred?" And the prophet replied, "In paradise." The man threw away some dates, carrying in his hand. He fought till he was martyred. Volume 5, Book 59, Number 375, narrated Al-Bara. When we faced the enemy, they took to their heel till I saw their women running towards the mountain, lifting up their clothes from their legs, revealing their leg bangles. The Muslims started saying, "The booty, the booty." Abdullah bin Jubar said, "The Prophet Muhammad had taken a firm promise from me not to leave this place, but his companions refused to stay. So when they refused to stay there, Allah confused them so that they could not know where to go, and they suffered 70 casualties." Though deprived of victory at Uhud, Muhammad was by no means vanquished. He continued making raids, that made being a Muslim not only virtuous in the eyes of Allah, but lucrative as well. In an Islamic worldview, there is no incompatibility between wealth, power, and holiness. Indeed, as a member of the true faith, it is only logical that one should also enjoy the material bounty of Allah, even if that means plundering it from infidels. As Muhammad had neutralized the Jewish tribe of Bani Qaynuqa after Badr, he now turned to the Bani Nadir after Uhud. According to the surah, Allah warned Muhammad of an attempt to assassinate him, and the Prophet ordered the Muslims to prepare for war against the Bani Nadir. The Bani Nadir agreed to go into exile if Muhammad permitted them to retain their movable property. Muhammad agreed to these terms, save that they leave behind their armor. Very interesting that he would agree to terms. So we move to the Battle of Funky Cold Medina. In 627 AD, Muhammad, faced the greatest challenge to his new community. In that year, the Quraysh of Mecca made their most determined attack on the Muslims at Medina itself. Muhammad thought it advisable not to engage them in a pitched battle as at Uhud, but took shelter in Medina, protected as it was by lava flows on three sides. The Meccans would have to attack from the northwest in a valley between the flows, and it was there that Muhammad ordered a trench dug for the city's defense. Volume 4, Book 52, number 208, narrated Anas, on the day of the battle of the trench, the Ansar, new converts to Islam, were saying, "We are those who have sworn allegiance to Muhammad for jihad forever, as long as we live." The Prophet replied to them, "O Allah, there is no life except the life of the hereafter. So honor the Ansar and immigrants from Mecca with your generosity." And narrated Mujashi, "My brother and I came to the Prophet, and I requested him to take the Pledge of Allegiance from us for migration," he said. "Migration has passed away from its people," I asked. "And for what will you take the Pledge of Allegiance from us then?" he said. "I will take the pledge for Islam and jihad." The Meccans were foiled by the trench and only able to send small raiding parties across it. After several days, they turned back for Mecca. Following his victory, Muhammad turned to the third Jewish tribe at Medina, the Bani Qurayza. While the Bani Qurnaqa and Bani Nadir had suffered exile, the fate of the Bani Qurayza would be considerably more dire. Surah, page 463 and 464. Then they, the tribe of Qurayza, surrendered, and the apostle confined them in Medina, in the quarter of Dial Harith. A woman of Bani al-Nazir, then the apostle went out to the market of Medina and dug trenches in it. Then he sent for them and struck off their heads in those trenches as they were brought out to him in batches. Among them was the enemy of Allah, Huayy bin Aktab, and Kin bin Asad, their chief. There were 600 or 700 in all, though some put the figure as high as 800 or 900. As they were being taken out in batches to the apostle, they asked Cobb what he thought would be done with them. And he replied, "Will you never understand? Don't you see that the summoner never stops, and those who were taken away do not return? By Allah, it is death." This went on until the apostle made an end to them, until they had all been killed. The apostle, Muhammad, upon the advice of Allah, the imaginary voice in his head, killed every last Jew. And in keeping with that, to this very day, Islam to destroy every Westerner and every last Jew. And people wonder why these savage, inbred pieces of filth act the way that they do. Come on, folks. It has not changed. It will not change. It will not change. These people share 75% of the same DNA with each other. It's not going to change. All I can say is, for fuck's sake, wake up, America. We find a clear precedent that explains the peculiar penchant of Islamic terrorists to behead their victims. It is merely another precedent bestowed by their prophet, following yet another of the Muslims' raids, this time on a place called Khaybar. The women of Khaybar were distributed among the Muslims, as was usual practice. Surah, page 511. The raid at Khaybar had been against Bani Nadir, whom Muhammad had earlier exiled from Medina. Surah, page 515. Kinana bin al-Rabai, who had the custody of the treasure of Bani al-Nadir, was brought to the apostle, who asked him about it. He denied that he knew where it was. A Jew came to the apostle and said that he had seen Kinana going round a certain ruin every morning early. When the apostle said to Kinana, "Do you know that if we find you have it, I shall kill you?" he said, "Yes." The apostle gave orders that the ruin was to be excavated and some of the treasure was found. When he asked him about the rest, he refused to produce it. So the apostle gave orders to Al-Zubayr bin Al-Awam, "Torture him until you extract what he has." So he kindled the fire with flint and steel upon his chest until the Jew was nearly dead. Then the apostle delivered him to Muhammad bin Maslama, and he struck off his head in revenge for his brother Mahmud. You see, the savages from yesteryear are the same savages of today. Muhammad's greatest victory came in 632 AD, 10 years after he and his followers had been forced to flee funky old Medina. In that year, he assembled a force of some 10,000 Muslims and allied tribes and descended on Mecca. The apostle had instructed his commanders when they entered Mecca only to fight those who resisted them, except a small number who were to be killed even if they were found beneath the curtains of the Kaaba. Surah, page 550. Volume 3, Book 29, number 72, narrated by Anas bin Malik. Allah's apostle entered Mecca in the year of its conquest, wearing an Arabian helmet on his head. And when the prophet took it off, a person came and said, "Ibn Qattal is holding the covering of the Kaaba, taking refuge in the Kaaba." And the prophet said, "Kill him." Following the conquest of Mecca, Muhammad outlined the future of His Religion, Volume 4, Book 52, Number 177, narrated Abu Huraira. Allah's Apostle said, "The hour of the Last Judgment will not be established until you fight with the Jews, and the stone behind which a Jew will be hiding will say, 'O Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me, so kill him.'" Volume 1, Book 2, Number 24, narrated Ibn Umar. Allah's Apostle said, "I have been ordered by Allah to fight against the people until they testify that none has the right to be worshipped but Allah, and that Muhammad is Allah's apostle, and offer the prayers perfectly and give the obligatory charity. So if they perform that, then they save their lives and property from me, except for Islamic laws, and then their reckoning accounts will be done by Allah." Let me repeat that. The hour of the Last Judgment will not be established until you fight with the Jews, and the stone behind which the Jew will be hiding will say, "O Muslim, there is a Jew behind me, so kill him." Allah's Apostle said, "I have been ordered by Allah to fight against the people until they testify that none has the right to be worshipped but Allah, and that Muhammad is Allah's apostle, and offer the prayers perfectly," the way Barack Obama says they're the most beautiful sound in the world, "and give the obligatory charity, the tax, the jizya. So if they perform that, then they save their lives and property from me, except for Islamic laws, so you're still going to give up your booty, and then their reckoning, their accounts, will be done by Allah," meaning they're still going to take your shit, but you might keep your head, because that's how they roll. It is from such warlike pronouncements as these that Islamic scholarship divides the world into Dar al-Islam, the House of Islam, whose nations have submitted to Allah, and Dar al-Harb, the House of War, those who have not. So those who have submitted to Allah are Dar al-Islam, and people like me, infidels, are Dar al-Harb, the House of War, those who have not. I will remain Dal al-Harb until they smite off my motherfucking head. It is this dispensation that the world lives under from its time until today. Then, as now, Islam's message to the unbelieving world is the same. Submit or be conquered. Come back Thursday as we begin to get into Sharia law, because you aren't going to believe what is next, and I cannot understand or fathom why the liberals and the women in the United States of America put up with Muslims coming to this country, clitorectomies, and the rest of it. God bless you, ignorant, scum-sucking vermin. God bless the United States of America. God bless you all, my friends. You either stand with me or you stand against me. You are either a Christian warrior against Islam, or you are fodder under our feet. Do not get in our way.
Sometimes I want to light up underneath the no smoking sign. Sometimes I wish they'd tell me how justice got so blind. I wish they'd just leave me alone, 'cause I'm doing